Smith is in for Stoke. Zach Bye and Phil Lindsay are coming up top of the hour. And they'll get you home this evening. You want to join us? Any thoughts, questions, comments, concerns? Do it. Hit us up at 303-713-1043. RamosLaw.com text line. Join us right there. Watch the show on Twitch, twitch.tv/DenverSportsCom. You can get in the action over there as well. Matt, we were talking about the tournament. It's underway. We do have to update Northwestern. It did go into overtime there with FAU. You and I both were on the 9-seeded Wildcats, and they were able to survive because FAU had the maybe worst possession of all time.
No, I mean, look, that's a tie ball game with 10 seconds left. Northwestern scores. FAU baseline inbound brings it up the floor. They got one timeout, and they're going up against a set defense. And they kind of let Jonnell Davis, who was a big star in last year's tournament, try and create a shot. And he took a contested forced three in that situation. I know that's a team that you trust that's laden with experience, and they've been there. But, hey, you got 6.4 left going up against a set defense. You got one left to burn. Let's take that timeout and set up a good shot so this thing doesn't go to overtime. Goes to overtime. Northwestern blows them out in overtime, and they advance. So FAU loses in overtime. And it's not the only interesting score we've got right now on the board, Josh.
No. Marquette having a little bit of problems on their own. Is it halftime still?
They're, of course, the second-seeded Marquette Golden Eagles. Mm-hmm. They are down to the number 15 Western Kentucky. Give me their mascot.
Wildcats.
Nope. Hilltoppers.
Oh, of course. How could I forget?
43-36 at halftime.
I assume everyone from Kentucky is a Wildcat.
San Diego State 35-29 over UAB. Of course, Alabama Birmingham, the Blazers. I should have asked you that one, too. You wouldn't have had UAB.
No, definitely no chance. Marquette is a bit of a bigger surprise. Marquette playing some strong basketball down the stretch. Don't know a ton about Western Kentucky, and if you think you do, you're a liar. But that would be a big one. I'm not going to write off Kentucky. There's still 20 minutes of basketball. Let's see how they bounce back and see if they can continue. That would I have Marquette making a nice little run here as well.
Well, and this one for Buffs fans is one to keep your eye on in the back of your mind, because if they somehow beat Florida, the matchup would be the winner of Western Kentucky and Marquette. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we look over to the other side of the bracket. What is it, NC State and Oakland, an 11 seed and a 13 seed will be facing off in the second round?
That's right.
You never know what can happen in the tournament, man. So maybe see you. Look, you get hot, you beat Florida, maybe you go up against a 15 seed in Western Kentucky. Not saying that's not a good basketball team. Just saying it's clearly, I mean, a little less daunting than going up against Marquette.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, how about, and we're going to tell you how we feel about the Buffs coming up, but let's look at the Rams from last night. A tough loss. They scored 11 freaking points in the first half. Nico Medved, though, had his head held high after the game.
I know it stings to go out this way, but, man, this team accomplished a ton this year when you look back on it and everything that they've done, and they did get to the tournament, and we did win when we get here. And as time goes by, you know, they'll be able to understand that even more, but today's not that day.
So not, you know, proud of what they did last night. Tough to deal with that in the loss, but they can hold their head high, as Coach said there, as about who they were throughout the year, all the way up to 13th in the nation at one point this year, and were being talked about as a top five team way, 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 way back when the season first started. Matt, I think that's the elephant in the room, right? There's a couple. How many guys actually leave a entire starting lineup of senior classes, of guys in their senior class, and what's the future of Nico Medved? That obviously, first part of that plays into the second part of what kind of roster would Nico even be returning to if he comes back as the Rams head coach?
They got a couple of commits for next year. In fact, let me look up their full basketball recruiting list for next year. I know they got a kid from Minnesota who's committed there. But look, this is primarily going to be a new team. Isaiah Stevens will be gone. Nick Clifford's got another year. If I was in his ear, I'd tell him, look, let's set you up with an NBA trainer. We're going to come back and try and win Mountain West Player of the Year, because you're going to be the number one option. You've got a chance with a really good season, averaging like 17, 5, and 2, maybe 2 steals as well. You know, 2 blocks, 2 steals. That's the type of player he is. Maybe you can find a way to sneak into the end of the first round. Because, Josh, once you call it in college, it's done if you don't have an NBA grade. And to call it early, without a secure NBA grade, if you have the potential, it's a tough one to sell. Mm-hmm. I mean, as it stands right now, I don't even think Neek would spend any time in the G League. So I think he'd be straight to Europe.
Really?
I don't think he'd be that type of player. I mean, I think he could potentially be a 3-and-D guy next year in the league if he comes back and he proves he can shoot like 40-some percent from three, you know, on a solid volume, then maybe. But outside of that, Joel Scott, I mean, he'll be a European guy for sure. So what does Nico do? I'm not sure. But if there's a program that comes to him and says, look, we've seen what you've done with Colorado State. You brought him to the tournament in back-to-back seasons. That's really impressive. Let's see what you can do with the money and the resources of, say, a West Virginia. Now I think we get into the conversation of, well, he's making 1.1 a year at CSU, and he maxes out the language in his contract through 29. He maxes out at 1.3, and we brought it up a little bit earlier. The guy who got hired as the interim head coach at West Virginia to replace Bob Huggins, you know, Booz and Cruz, Bob Huggins. We all know him well. Yeah. You know, he's got the trash bag of beer cans, the pasture seat. That guy's getting paid $1.5 million for 10 months. You bring in a guy like Nico, we're probably talking at a significant, maybe over $1 million per year raise. That, for your family, has to be, and he's got a young family, and they ride or die. Yeah, I think his wife, her name's Erica. She's always on social media supporting everybody. I've heard nothing but phenomenal things about Nico Medved. If I were a bigger school and I were trying to bring up a fast riser in the ranks, he has got to be number one on the list.
Do CSU fans get all up in their feelings and have, you know, I don't know about hate, but mad at the Medved family for leaving? Because this is the best. I mean, look, maybe there's something I'm missing from the 1930s, but this has been the best era of Colorado State Rams basketball of all time.
I don't know. Eustachie had a couple of good years. They were consistently, you know, finishing in the top of the Mountain West. This rivals it, though.
I guess Eustachie, like, obviously a real poor taste in my mouth at the end of that, so.
No question.
It's hard for me to give the props there.
Yeah, no question. I mean, you might need some gum for that one.
Definitely.
I think that for CSU, if you're upset with him, I mean, anybody who ever has success at CSU typically ends up moving on. It's not the same college football landscape or college athletics landscape that it used to be. It applies to basketball just the same.
Yes, it does.
So, yeah, I mean, if you want to be upset with him, that's fine. But if it's a better opportunity for his family and CSU didn't come to the table willing to match it, then you're just be mad at the university. Don't be mad at Nico.
There you go. That's very well said. We wondered earlier how many of you Rammies would be rooting for the Buffaloes today. It's a nice text. 303-210. I'm a CU fan today. CSU couldn't hit water falling out of a boat last night.
No kidding. No kidding. And yeah, it is state pride, right? I mean, like, clearly we've got the rivalry. And I think there was some gas poured on the rivalry fire this year with Dion and Jay Norvell. Probably some much needed gas.
Definitely.
Yeah, because there was a big segment of the CU fan base that felt like playing CSU every year was beneath them. There's a special place in my heart for the Rocky Mountain Showdown. It's the one time the state really shows up. So I appreciate that rivalry. But make no mistake, if they're not playing CU, I'm a CSU fan. Mm-hmm. I just am. Most of the time.
Most of the time. Yeah, there was extra juice after the Rocky Mountain Show. It makes it fun. Those days should be great for in-state rivalries, and then we should all pool together to root for Colorado athletics when they're not playing one another.
Yeah, I mean, a good run in the tournament is by anybody. I mean, Air Force or, you know, if UNC Greeley wins the CBI, I think they play this weekend. I think they play Sunday.
The point, CBI?
Yeah, I was just being a little facetious there. The point was, though, when basketball in the state does well, no matter what program, it's good for basketball in the state. And especially with conference realignment coming up, you know, I saw somebody on the text line saying, well, you guys sound so biased. You could make those, you know, those arguments about Tad. What's Tad going to do? I mean, look, I know him real well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going to happen after this season.
I mean, they just set a record for wins.
I know.
Nothing's going to happen.
I know. But you're going to the Big 12, and now you're officially recruiting against everybody. And we're talking about a new team. It'll be a new team up in Boulder, too. KJ's going to be gone most likely. Tristan's going to be gone most likely. KJ could come back. For him, it's probably never going to get better than it is right now. I mean, he was almost Pac-12 Player of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm not so sure about an NBA career for KJ Simpson, but we'll see. Now, that being said, Cody will be gone, Tristan will be gone, KJ will be gone, Luke O'Brien will be gone, Lampkin will be gone. I know they've got some actually good talent. They got some four stars committed for next year. But when they kind of struggled midseason, CU lost a big man, a four-star big man who was like 6'10". They lost him who was already – they let him out of his NLI. Not, it wasn't just like a verbal commitment they lost. They let him out of his national letter of intent. So we'll see what happens. But make no mistake, I mean, price of poker goes way, way up. And if you tell – if you were to sit here and tell me – and I know this probably frustrates some people out there, but if you were to sit there and tell me that in 5 years Colorado was back to where they were when they left the Big 12, I probably would believe you. It's going to be a bear because the Big 12 is better now than it was then.
Yes, it is. All right, well, a couple of things changing the basketball landscape. Nico leaving could do so, but Michael Porter Jr. is doing that for the Denver Nuggets. How has he evolved into the player he's been post All-Star break? Let's hear how Michael Malone answered that question next.
You're listening to Stokely and Josh on Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
We used to taste that Ted and Uber freight. Couple of kids in a Chevrolet. Catch a little air when we cross the tracks. Sipping on some from a paper sack.
That's my favorite part of that. Reminds me of New Orleans. All right, you want to talk some Nugs? You want to give some love to Michael Porter Jr.? And we can't ignore what Nikola did last night. Another, yeah, that's right, another 30-point triple-double for Nikola Jokic. 30 points, 14 rebounds, 11 assists. He was a assist away, an assist away from achieving that triple-double in the first half. It was a big night for Michael Porter Jr. Both he and Nikola had 30 points, 31 for MPJ. It's the 15th time in Michael Porter Jr.'s career, Matt, that he has dropped 30 in a game, and the Nuggets are 13-2 in those games. Let's hear a little bit from Michael Malone on how MPJ's game is growing.
To some of his aggressive drives to the basket, like, he's not just a jump shooter. He's shown he can get downhill, attack, and finish in traffic. So I think Michael's game right now is just firing on all cylinders. And he's healthy, which is a big part of that.
Health is obviously going to be a part of that, but his confidence, firing on all cylinders, as Michael Malone put it, he's just been, and it just doesn't seem like, all right, he's in a streak. He's in the zone right now. Matt, he's playing a different brand of basketball. You know what I mean? He's just not on a heater throwing rocks in the ocean, and sometimes you get in those zones as a hooper. Trust me, Matt, I know.
Oh, yeah.
It's literally him doing more on the court, recognizing where he should be, how much spacing matters for what they're trying to do, and him being a problem in spacing a month ago and now being a solution in spacing post All-Star break.
I don't know if he's a problem. You think he's a problem in spacing?
I definitely think he was a problem, man. You stand in one spot, you're taking a good percentage of the floor away by not moving.
Okay. I think this is a little strong, but you're more than entitled to feel the way you feel about it. I'll just say, you're seeing a guy who now knows where he's supposed to be. Okay? You're seeing a guy who understands what his role is. And I think, honestly, there's a bit of a concerted effort to take some pressure off of Nikola and Jamal. Probably didn't feel great to go through the finals. You know, you won, but there were two games where you really let everybody down. I mean, 5 points and 2 points. Mm-hmm. You probably come back this year, look around, and recognize, hey, man, out of everybody who played last year, there were plenty of games last season where he did not close. I mean, plenty of times where Bruce Brown closed, or maybe, you know, they had Jeff Green close. Now he's closing pretty much every night. Sometimes there was a stretch there where Peyton Watson was bringing it in, but he's kind of since fallen off a little bit. Mm-hmm. And now MPJ is picking up some of the slack where maybe Jamal hasn't been shooting as efficiently lately. MPJ is. Mm-hmm. Now what happens if Michael's not making shots? That's where I go, okay, has he turned a corner? Or is this just a really good stretch? Like,
so does he do other things still or completely disappear is what you're asking?
If you're not making threes or making long twos, how else are you helping us win? Yeah. And I think that we've seen him get to the basket more this year, cut off ball, move off ball with a purpose more this year, understand his role more this season, which is to provide support to Jokic and Murray and play off of those guys. But there's a fine line between just being a supporting player. Like, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope offensively. Mm-hmm. Supporting player. If you need a kick out for an open three, maybe he'll curl off a screen at the elbow and give you a free throw line jumper. Something like that.
Yeah.
But you're not going to get him the ball in a rotation where you're swinging it over to the wing and now KCP's breaking somebody down one-on-one. Well, MPJ's starting to do that just a little bit more because they need another perimeter guy to be able to get downhill and get to the basket. And he's slowly doing that more consistently. I'm not going to go that far until we see it in the playoffs.
That's fair.
Like, to me, it feels like he's turning a corner because I can see that maturity you're talking about. But until you show me when it matters most, when we need it, because the Nuggets do need him to be better than he was last year.
100%.
Like, he averaged 16 points in a couple of those series last year, and that's good. But they kind of need him to be up around 20 now. Yeah. And can you do that in the playoffs when the game plan changes from just a 1 out of 82 regular season game plan to now you are bona fide, you know, third on the scouting report? See, one of the better kept secrets about the Nuggets is that teams around the league the last few seasons have had almost zero respect for Michael Porter Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They expected every time the ball touched his hands, it's going up from three. He became easier to defend. Now look at his growth and development since the Phoenix series a year before that. Phoenix ran every offensive action at Michael Porter Jr. in that playoff series.
They were hunting him.
Hunting him.
Yeah.
So much to the point where he couldn't be on the floor because he couldn't stay in front of anybody. Now he's defending better on the weak side off ball. He is a better on-ball defender as well. And I would say in transition, there's more effort to get back on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
So show me those things in the playoffs. Show me your ability to get to the free throw line and get to the cup if you're not knocking down off, you know, threes. Because those games are coming.
Yeah. And you know what else, man? I've been harping on it all week, and I'm going to bang the drum again here today for what Jamal and Michael's relationship is. First half. It was Jamal, kind of transition, but he's attacking a player, goes up, creates contact, gets the foul, and just kind of flings one up with his left hand. Puts some nice English on it, it bounces front of the rim, gets that shooter's roll, goes in. And Jamal's on the ground, Matt fired up. He's fist pumping, he's screaming, he's flexing, he's doing his Jamal thing. Michael Porter Jr. is at half court, and I watched Michael. I got to go to the game last night as a fan. So I watched Michael at half court. He fist pumps with the same enthusiasm that Jamal had just fist pumped in. And then what he did was sprint, not walk, not jog, sprint to where Jamal Murray was on the floor, picked him up, smacked him on the rear end and said something. Let's go. Go, boy, whatever, you know, whatever they're saying to fire one another up. This relationship, man, is changing in front of our eyes, and it's so much for the better. I mean, anything you do in life, if you have some off-court, off-work chemistry, if you know who the player, the person you are working with better, it's going to translate to your job, to the game, to practice, to whatever it may be. I don't know what changed between the two.
Well,
but let's thank the basketball gods that it has, because they are seeing the game from the same light for the first time ever.
I think Jamal sees Michael more as more of a peer now, rather than more of some young, talented player that he has to bring with him.
Well said, yeah.
Because, Josh, when you show up consistently, right, when you show up consistently to do your job, someone learns that they can count on you because you have begun to earn their trust.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what you're seeing. You're seeing Jamal give Michael some opportunities, involve him in the offense in certain possessions where he may not have in the past, and maybe Jamal diverts to kind of playing a little hero ball. Like, even at the end of the Knicks game, there were a couple possessions where, as you brought up the other day, he might as well have been playing 1-on-5, Jamal Murray, because you knew that shot was going up. But in the past, you had seen sometimes those hero ball segments kind of last a little too long, and he's doing that for 3 or 4 possessions in a row. Well, now it's a 4-point lead only instead of an 8 or a 7-point lead, where now MPJ's open in the corner. MPJ's running with me in transition. I'm not going to go up and try and force the layup. I'm going to move it behind my back to MPJ for the dunk in transition. There are things like that that I'm starting to see a better bond, as you mentioned, between those guys. And it's based upon consistency of production, consistency of effort, and probably growing up a little bit.
Yeah, that might be a big one there, that last part of growing up a little bit. How do you feel about it, Nuggets fans? We'll take a timeout. We're going to preview what the Nuggets have coming up this weekend around 1:45. But let's get back to the tournament. I want to talk about all this conversation about Kentucky getting beaten, if it actually changes how college coaches recruit moving forward. That's coming up next.
Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents Stokely and Josh.
What? Come on. Yeah. What? Come on. Here we go. Oh. Come on. Oh.
this time. It's Matt Smith sitting in for Stoke today. We got you till 2 o'clock, and then the drive takes over. How do you feel about Good Charlotte?
Grew up with that kind of music, so that's fine.
Okay.
I'm not like a massive Good Charlotte fan, but a couple of their top hits, no problem.
No problem at all.
Let me think. Hold on. Good Charlotte songs. Boys and Girls, right?
Yeah.
And then what's the other one? The Anthem?
This is the Anthem.
This is the Anthem.
Hands up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That might be the end of my Good Charlotte.
Lifestyles of the Rich and the Famous?
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah,
that's a big one. That's a big one.
Outside of that, I definitely couldn't give you another one.
All right. Okay. Yeah. We'll go to a concert sometime together.
I'm probably okay on the Good Charlotte concerts. Yeah. You want to go to Alanis Morissette with me, though?
Oh, I'm in, dude.
I saw her the last time she came for the 25th anniversary of the Jagged Little Pill tour.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome.
I'm not a music snob. I'll listen to anything.
It's pretty much the same way. Yeah. But if I'm going to go to a concert, I really, at this stage of my life, I got to love the artist.
Okay.
So.
See, my girl listens to weird stuff, and then sometimes I have to pay the boyfriend tax and go to some of her weird music concerts.
Like just indie bands or something like that?
Yeah, just like some,
Yeah.
Some weird jazz flute stuff that she likes, you know.
A little jazz flute.
Yeah, it's strange, but teach their own.
What was in Parks and Rec, Ron Swanson's character? Duke Silver. Duke Silver. Yeah.
That's right. We have to go see old Duke.
Yeah.
All right, real quick before we get into
college. Jazz flute is more Ron Burgundy, right?
Ron Burgundy. Yeah, that's right. Okay. He was trying to impress the little blonde girl. Before we get to college basketball and how recruiting could be changing in real time, I saw this text, and I like this. It's from the 303-469. The problem with MPJ was Murray's selfishness and unwillingness to pass the basketball. I think there was a little bit of that, but I don't want to put, I couldn't go all 100%. That's why their basketball relationship wasn't great. I might give you some of that. That's a good thought. I just think it's more of kind of what we had hinted at, Matt, that Jamal didn't believe he was playing the game the right way and so excluded him. And now that's shifting right in front of us.
I think there were moments later in games and clutch situations when they gave Porter the opportunity and he did not come through. And so when a guy doesn't come through for you for a while, there's obviously something that develops in the back of your mind and your consciousness where you go, I can't. I just can't. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is such a big shot. I'm not giving it to Mike here because I know he's not going to make the right play and this ball's going up and he's in the coffin corner taking a, step back three with a hand in his face from the very corner of the floor. Like, I'm not doing that. Well, you start showing up. You make big plays in big moments. You're unselfish. Maybe you pass up a shot that you would have taken in the past and give it back to Jamal. Mm-hmm. And now we're starting to build that trust and now we're starting to build that chemistry. But to Texter's point, I think there was a period of time when Jamal really, when the game was on the line, Jokic was the one, if anybody, who was going to defer to MPJ because Jokic will just make the right play no matter what. But there were definitely some times in the past, to Texter's point, where you're like, Jamal Mike's right there. He's wide open on the wing. And Jamal's, taking a contested two. But until Michael had earned his trust, then I think, but now you're seeing a little differently.
Oh, yeah,
so.
You definitely are. All right, we'll get back to the Nuggets, preview what they have. It's a trip to Portland this week, and we'll discuss a question Matt asked earlier. Should Jamal even make the trip because it's a one-off? We'll answer that coming up in our final segment. Going to college basketball here for a second, and we told you earlier about Kentucky and SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, the things he said about getting too many lower-level schools in the tournament, despite Kentucky getting upset by Oakland last night. And then it led to Calipari having the conversation about how he recruits and his approach of kind of the one-and-done process versus getting, not a five-star recruit, maybe a three-star recruit, develop them to a two-star recruit, develop it into a three-star, four-star recruit. And then in the junior and senior years of that group, you can really make a run. We've seen teams have success like that in the tournament. And Calipari sounded like, man, I got to have a real conversation, sit down and think this process out as to what's best moving forward for the University of Kentucky. And I wanted to further that conversation. NIL is a part of this. I don't think one and dones are going to go anywhere. There's still these outlier players that are absolutely great and don't want to be in college for more than 1 year because it's always the dream to go be in the NBA and have your name called on draft night. But with NIL and the things that it is now and seeing teams have success that are upperclassmen that have been in college for 3 or 4 years, Matt, I think we might be able to see some of that go back that way, where the powerhouses, even the Kentuckys and the UConns and the Dukes and the North Carolinas of the past, it's They're not going to go away from the one-and-dones, but it will be less because they can pay kids to come and stay, be developed, and chase a championship before you put your name in the hat for the NBA draft.
The one-and-done era has been a fascinating era as a case study. You're seeing fewer, by and large, like legit five-star guys who are going to step in and take over programs. There used to be.
Yeah.
And I'm not maybe exactly sure why that is the case, right? I mean, they had the G League Ignite, which is now being shut down. I don't know if you saw that.
I saw that.
So that was in lieu of going to school, you could go play in the G League for a year and then be eligible for the NBA draft for another year. But the NBA just came out, I think it was yesterday, actually.
And they're paying those guys over $1 million.
It worked for Scoot Henderson in Portland. I'm trying to think. Kai Jones, was he one of those guys? He's not even in the league right now.
But that's
now.
It. That's only the two.
But it really hasn't worked outside of that. So what do you do? Well, I think if you can get those guys back into school for a year, because there has been some conversation at even removing the one-and-done rule and just letting guys go right back to the NBA. I'm actually opposed to that idea. I love giving players the chance to maximize on their earning potential when they have it, because that's the way of the world in this country.
I agree with that.
It's capitalism. But you need to marinate a little bit, because you go from AAU in high school straight to the NBA. Okay, Kobe did it, right? Who was the last guy? Andrew Bynum? I think he was the last player to go from high school to the NBA, because it was Gerald Green did it as well. There weren't many, though. Kobe did it and Garnett did it, and those are probably the two.
That's the most successful.
McGrady?
I don't know if T-Mac did.
I think T-Mac did it, too, now that I think about it. But there haven't been many that have actually made it into success stories.
T-Mac did. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Those are the biggest ones that I can
Amari
think of.
Amari Stoudemire.
And Stoudemire did it. Yeah, okay. So, I mean, yeah, back in the day.
Oh, Dwight Howard. I didn't realize Dwight Howard's on this list.
List is getting bigger.
Yeah.
List is getting bigger. So maybe they end up going back there. But this year, domestically, for the NBA draft, is one of the worst classes I've ever seen. Nobody in this class would have gone. I mean, maybe they would have based upon potential and reputation. But, Josh, let's look at Cal, okay? This is a different college basketball. You've got guys, especially lately, with COVID years, so they're staying in school 5-6 years. I mean, look at the kid, Kolke, who hit the 10 threes last night for Oakland. He spent 5 years at a D3 and had one more year because of his COVID years, so he transferred to Oakland, and look what he did last night. So I am of the opinion that the one and done, if that's all you're playing, going to be tough. Going to be tough to win like that. And Calipari even brought it up and said, what am I supposed to do, change what I've always done? We help young people, and we're helping families. And I think that probably falls on some deaf ears with the Kentucky fan base, because they're like,
we
want to win.
Right.
So maybe you got to get more into the transfer market. Like, if we look at some of these programs.
Oh, just play the portal?
UConn last year, they had a couple of guys that transferred from some smaller schools. But that's a team that had a dominant freshman surrounded by some experienced players. The year before, Kansas in 2022, they had some experienced guys, and they had Remy Martin from Arizona State, remember?
Right, yep.
Like, you need some of those experienced players who've been in college basketball for 6 years, 5-6 years, to win right now. Now, eventually, the COVID year is going to wear out, and nobody's going to be able to have that COVID year. That's still a year or two down the line. But strictly playing the one-and-done game, it hasn't really turned into a historic amount of tournament success for Calipari, at least probably less than you think.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see what it looks like in a couple of years with how basketball teams specifically, because you already see kind of Dion taking advantage of the portal in football, but what it will look like with these upperclassmen teams having some more success than the old one-and-done of basketball tradition. All right, quick timeout. We are under an hour away from CU in Florida tipping off on TBS. We'll preview that game coming up. The Nuggets in Portland Saturday night. We'll preview that one. Should Jamal make the trip? And the Avs are finally back at Ball Arena. Columbus this evening at 7. How do they handle their business? We look ahead to the busy sports weekend next.
It's Stokely and Josh on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan. I'm
up and winding down. Our weekend is set to begin. Yours is right around the corner. Zach and Phil will get you there. They're the drive, and they start at 2. We'll get you home through 6 if you're one of those late starters. I guess technically we are, but they'll also get you home with Denver Sports tonight, 6 to 7, and our Denver Sports crew getting it done for you. I want to remind you, tonight, if you're looking for some plans, how about some fun on a Friday night up the hill with Mike Evans? He's going to be at Ameristar Blackhawk from 6 to 7 this evening. You can watch all the March Hoops action on one of their amazing screens. You can also check the Abs, who are in action tonight. They got the best food in Blackhawk. You can register to win some incredible prizes, including staycations in one of their luxurious spa suites. They're giving away 3 of those tonight. So go see Mike Evans, 6 to 8 at the Ameristar 29 HD TVs. How about the Timberline Grill? You can enjoy all the games there. Get your grub on. $5 apps that include cheesy fries, sliders, nachos, pizza, plus the sports book where you won't miss any of the action. Ameristar Blackhawk, it's the one-stop destination for sports, dining, and entertainment, plus lodging. Check out what they can do for you at AmeristarBlackhawk.com and go see Mike tonight from 6 to 8. He'll be the guy in mom jeans. Eating a bunch of food.
Well, not as much as he used to.
No.
Shout out Sona.
He looks great.
Yeah. You know, when we go up to Blackhawk, that's the star is always, we call it the star. Mm-hmm. It's always home base. We'll go park there and then maybe we'll go around. But, you know, it's always, you go see what the action is. Maybe get a hot shoe.
Hey,
never know.
There you go. Yeah.
Hot shoe.
There you go. All right. Let's talk a little bit about what the weekend will be. And let's start with CU in Florida, Matt, because that thing is about 40 minutes from it tipping off. On TBS, the guys will be on air during it and give you the breakdowns of everything that you may miss. Let's start with Tristan Da Silva. Same version of Tristan that was in the play-in game, or is it one of those games where you get frustrated and going, why aren't you playing the way you're capable of playing?
I think the frustration with Tristan Da Silva alone is the inconsistency, so I couldn't begin to tell you what we're going to get. And I think that's part of the problem with this version of the Buffs is outside of KJ Simpson, you really don't know what you're going to get on a night-to-night basis. Now, Da Silva coming down the backstretch of the season, CU goes on a winning streak. Big part of the reason was because Tristan was producing. Obviously, Cody's production fell off. Somebody had to pick up, and Tristan started playing like it was his senior year. Now, I mean, look, Florida's going to be without their best player. Now I got to remember the name. Do you remember it off the top of your head? Micah Hogenbort, something like that.
Hogan.
7'1" kid for Florida.
Hollywood Hogan.
Their best player, not going to play. Mm-hmm. But they do have Zion Pullen. They got a couple of guys who can fill it up a little bit. They got good guard play. And in the tournament, you can get by with good guard play, especially if you go up against a team where, man, look, I mean, we've got some 6'9 guys. We just don't have our 7-footer. Well, CU doesn't have a 7-footer either. So I think in some matchups, missing their big man would hurt Florida. I don't think it's going to hurt them as much today. Where this game could get tricky for CU is Florida's a fast-paced team. They like to get up and down, push the basketball, score in transition. Colorado, on the other hand, really isn't as adept at that as they have been in the past. That because they don't have proficient ball handlers outside of KJ Simpson. You need guys who know how to run the break and facilitate for others. We'll see if Cherry Creek star Julian Hammond is back in the lineup because they could use another ball handler for sure. This is going to be a tight one. You know, the line on this is fascinating. Colorado opened up as a 2.5-point dog, I think. Well, now they're a 1-point favorite.
Really?
And, oh, yeah. And the total is, now I just had it here, current. Total's at 157.5. They expect points tonight. And I'll tell you, last night, Kansas and Samford had an over-under, I think, around 160-something as well. And I'm like, look at Kansas. I mean, no Kevin McCullough Jr. They don't have their best scorer. You know, they're going up against Stanford. I'd be surprised if they were able to. Well, in the first, like, 10 minutes, they had 36 points. So Vegas tends to know more than they don't. They expect an offensive bounce back here from CU. I'm going to need to see it before I can be like, yeah. But if Colorado can knock down threes, if you get the supporting cast to play well tonight, you may have a shot in this one. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a tough matchup for the Buffs, though.
Yeah.
It will.
I think with Da Silva, KJ Simpson, like, as inconsistent as Da Silva can be, I feel like it's the other end of the spectrum with KJ, of how consistent he can be. It may not be as good as you want it to be, but you know the effort, the kind of play you're going to get out of KJ Simpson, you get that regularly. How about something you and I talked about, and you brought it up, Matt, that they had been running the offense through Lampkin. Does that continue today? And if it does, the answer that we had as to solving some of the turnovers is, hey, big fella, we want you to touch the ball, but stop putting it on the floor. Get deep enough with your positioning so that when the ball does enter the post, it's about your pivot foot rather than putting the ball on the floor.
Tad's best teams over the years have been when he's been able to play through the post. When Josh Scott was there,
yeah,
that was his best version because, look, you can get a touch, but Josh isn't instantly going to throw it up. Lampkin's decision-making from time to time, while he's a good passer, can be very suspect, okay? I think they're playing through Lampkin as a result of nobody else stepping up and being assertive. They did not play through Lampkin as much against Boise State. And when they did down the stretch, he did have that tip in, but that wasn't because they were playing through him. That's because he was around the basket.
Good positioning, yeah.
I think it's a bit of a trap that they could fall into relying on him too much, because if the Buffs are going to advance, it's going to be because of KJ Simpson and Da Silva. Now, you obviously need everybody else to step up and knock down some shots, but those two will be the driving force behind everything. At this stage, I've written off Cody Williams and whatever he's going to contribute. If he contributes anything, it'll be a bonus. But outside of that, it feels like his time as a Buff, you know, it just kind of went out with a whimper and came in with a lot of hype. But this is a concerning trend here. Florida's won 10 consecutive first-round matchups against teams seeded 10th or lower.
Oh, damn.
Their last loss coming in 0-4 against Manhattan. They're averaging 85.1 points this season, fifth most among all teams in the NCAA tournament. Wow. They've been strong on the glass. They rank second in the nation, total rebounds, and third offensive boards. Now, those numbers, Josh, probably get affected without Micah Holdengarden, Brewster, Steiner.
Yeah,
that guy. But outside of that, they've got some other good players. Now, like I said, Zion Pullen. He was the leading scorer at UC Irvine before he transferred over. And then Walter Clayton Jr. is their other guard. You know, he's the first Florida player with 600 points in a campaign since Nick Calathes. Mm. He had a moment in the NBA. Scored 618 in 08-09. Okay. So really good scorers from the guard position. Colorado cannot have their offensive ineptitude that we've seen in the last three games show up.
You're absolutely
right. Can't have it.
You're absolutely right. Real quick, going back to CSU Texas last night. You're like Mr. Show guy. You gave me all the great show recs.
TV shows. Okay.
So I'm assuming you've seen Breaking Bad.
No.
Oh, dude, what?
When the shows get too popular, it's...
You're too cool for school?
Breaking Bad, Game of Thrones, Sopranos, Succession, Euphoria, like all the ones that everybody goes gaga over. I'll get to those in like 10 years. The Wire.
That'll be down the road. I've actually never seen The Wire either.
All those, I'm sure, are great.
I never saw Entourage. Better Call Saul. And Kev was mad about it.
Entourage is another one for me.
And then you know what I did? I told Kev, I'm going to give it a season. I'm going to watch this thing and figure out if I'm really missing something. It was garbage.
Yellowstone is probably the only like cultural movement of a hour-long drama that I got sucked into.
Okay. Yeah. Well, maybe you won't know the reference, but people will. Texas coach Rodney Terry. Kevin, did you watch Breaking Bad?
I did not, know.
What's wrong with you? You guys...
I saw the first scene of the dudes in his underwear falling out of a motorhome. Like,
it's classic. Yeah,
are you about to say that Rodney Terry looks
like Gus?
Giancarlo Esposito? Yeah.
I don't know who that is. Gus. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that a tired take that's been said before?
No, but you're right. He does look. I've seen that take before.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You weren't the first one to think.
Maybe like he's like the younger Gus before he became like a drug tycoon leader and had a lot of stress going on in his life. That's kind of what he looks like.
True. And look, Josh, I mean, that's not where it ends for the Buffs. So whether or not the men do well, I mean, we got the women's game right after that.
How do you feel about the women's team? The women's team and CSU men's team sort of lived the same path of basketball life this year. Hot, hot start. CSU not as hot as what the women Buffaloes were able to do with knocking off LSU. But both teams stubbed their toe down the stretch and then never figured out who they were again.
Well, the CU women went 2-6 in their last eight games.
Oh, dang.
But they were playing against some elite competition in the Pac-12. Either way, you go 2-6, it's not a good finish. CU was projected as a number one seed, the women were, by the selection committee in their first top 16 reveal on February 15th. In the 8 years, and shout out to Brian Howell on this number, in the 8 years the committee has done top 16 reveals earlier in the regular season, Colorado is the first team to be a projected one seed and finish outside the top 16.
Oh, dang.
It was a bad finish. Yeah. It was a bad finish. But they do return the majority of the team that made that Sweet 16 run last year. It's all about Jalen Sherrod as the point guard, okay? Frieda Foreman, she's their shooter. She's got to be able to produce. Aaronette Vonleh, Quay Miller. If the girls can pull it together, they can go on another, at least probably get out of the first weekend of the tournament. But they're going up against Drake today. And Drake, look, they won the Missouri Valley Conference tournament. They're a good team, but they're kind of all centered around one driving force. They've got a one really good player, and outside of that, it's, you know, an average team. If Colorado brings their brand of basketball to women, they'll win tonight, hopefully.
Right here on KKFN, KKFN HD1 Longmont Denver. I was letting you finish.
Well, good. I wasn't even anywhere in the area code, so enjoy it.
All right, big one tonight. It's a big, big CU day. First time ever, obviously, both playing on the same day, and let's see if they can further the history with both getting dubs here on the same day. How about the Avalanche tonight, Matt? Columbus at 7, they're back at Ball Arena finally, the noon Sunday. You're going to get Sid the Kid and the Penguins coming on. I guess he's not really the kid anymore, but the Penguins will be here at noon on TNT. That means McKinnon and finds a point. Will the new guys continue to do what they do? And you said earlier it's Georgie both games this weekend.
I would be surprised Friday, if Sunday. It wasn't. Yeah. I'd be surprised if it wasn't. The last time they played was Tuesday. They've had 3 days off.
I think goalies get too much time off anyway.
And Jared Bednar mentioned that earlier in the year. And I think Georgie have played well enough on the road trip that now it's okay. You got, you know, less than 15 games here. Let's lock in. And the one beautiful part about where the Avalanche are right now, you look at the injury report. Columbus has got like 6 guys on it, including their best defenseman. Nobody's on the Avs injury report.
Oh, how beautiful is that?
Outside of Landeskog, this team is fully healthy.
Mm-hmm.
At the right time, they're starting to build chemistry. And I love the Avs tonight in this spot because it's not like you can overlook the Blue Jackets. From time to time, we'll see this Nuggets team kind of mail it in against one of the bottom feeders in the NBA because, like I said yesterday, they're having a hard time faking it until they make it with a lot of their easier matchups.
Mm-hmm.
They just struggle to put 3 good ones so they can chill in the fourth together. Well, the Avs don't have that luxury. The Avs have to build with all their new guys, so there's some extra motivation to stay on top of it. And again, I think they've started slow a lot. You know, coming back down multiple goals, not a good strategy, especially against teams that you don't want to let hang around. Like Columbus is 10-16-7 on the road, but that means they've taken teams to overtime on the road 7 different times. I have played against Columbus financially a couple times this year, and they burned me in some spots where I go, well, how the hell did you let the Blue Jackets hang around for that game? Well, hopefully that doesn't happen tonight.
And then as far as the Nuggets go with what they'll have, it's Portland on Saturday. Matt and I discussed whether or not you just leave Jamal at home. Then you get to host the Grizzlies on Monday. I'm going to stay away from Nikola triple-double for the weekend, kind of unknowing what the roster will look like. Portland's bad. They should go out there and take care of their business. But I'm going to leave the Joker triple-double alone on Saturday night.
I'm kicking myself.
Oh, man. I told you. You should have done it.
I know.
And the number was beautiful.
The number, I haven't seen plus 260 for Jokic at a price on triple-doubles in, like, the last 4 years.
Yeah.
I'm definitely kicking myself. But, again, I hit the MPJ, so I'll be all right. I'll be all right.
That's
Nuggets are rolling, man.
Yeah, they are.
And it's a treat to be able to watch them whenever you turn them on.
Mm-hmm.
Like I told you, I'm juxtaposing the Colorado State-Texas game where both teams combined to shoot, what, like 3 of 30 from 3? And on the other screen, I got Nikola Jokic and Michael Porter Jr. and KCP. Okay, well, now here's a handoff DHO to from Jokic to Porter. He's dishing it down in the lane for Gordon. Gordon out for KCP in the corner. You know, that's just beautiful basketball.
Sure is.
So every time I get to watch the Nuggets, you know, I'll say this. The Nuggets have earned more of my respect this year, and it's not like I didn't last year, but the ability to repeat and be nearly as dominant and defensively better, that earns my respect, and I think it's earned the respect of the rest of the league, who now look at the Nuggets a little bit differently. Maybe even as opposed to maybe where they did at the beginning of the year, was it a flash in the pan? You beat a Miami team. Miami shouldn't have been in the finals last year. Well, now you go out and prove it. Another year of team dominance, all healthy. People, it's an undeniability factor that the Nuggets have.
Zach Bye, Philip Lindsay sliding in here. And real quick, Matt, thank you so much for the week. Been a ton of fun, man.
Always.
Appreciate you kicking it here with me. Real fast, I got to ask y'all something. We hadn't even got to this yet. I went to the Nuggets game last night, brought my little cousins. They're like 14 and 10.
Nice.
The 14-year-old doesn't care anything about basketball, but the 10-year-old loved it. And we got on the Jumbotron.
Did you?
Oh. Yeah.
Is that because you texted somebody?
I did.
Yeah.
I knew it. I want to know people. Yeah. My guy Dylan, like he was going nuts. He wanted to be on the jumbotron.
He said, "Look at Uncle. Uncle's big time."
I kind of thought, like, what is the equivalent of being on the jumbotron as a child in adulthood? You know what I mean? Like, dude, he lost
viral
his
tweet.
Mind. He lost his mind.
The 10-year-old,
right? Jumping up. Yeah, like, I just saw, we were on the, and we're like, I don't know, man. And then somebody's like, you guys were just on the jumbotron, because I did. And I'm like, oh, look, we were on the jumbotron. You would have thought the kid just won the lottery. It was unbelievable.
That's a special moment, man. Anytime, like, that's big. Even, I remember hearing my name on the radio for the first time. Like sending a text message in to the Jim Rome show and having Jim Rome read my text.
Yeah.
It's like, it knocked me over with a feather. I was 16 when emails were getting sent into radio stations.
Yeah, yeah. Fire up the fax machine for your next take or what?
Yeah, it's like now you just text, but then it was like 2000, I don't know, 3 or something. But even just the power of getting your name said on the radio to, you know, anyone, but Jumbotron, dude. I got on the Jumbotron at Coors Field Father's Day 2018.
Nice.
With my son, and I thought I hit the lottery.
Oh, really?
Yeah, man.
You're holding the Jumbotron
for a sold-out Coors Field?
Yeah.
I mean, shoot.
Did you hold him up like he was Simba?
I did not. We were doing the cornhole thing. And he was like literally 1 year old. He was like 1 or 2 years old, just holding them.
That's pretty cool.
So we saw the pictures and stuff. So even as an adult, I think getting on the Jumbotron's kind of cool.
He'll forever talk about that.
I hope so.
Oh, he forever will. Every time he sees, he's going to be, Uncle, remember when we did this?
Yeah, yeah.
Go back and tell all his friends how cool he is.
It was pretty dang cool.
Did you hear that we held an election on the show today?
No.
For president of sports?
Yeah.
We
both put forth our platforms and campaigns. And
so you guys are running.
We ran for president of sports.
Holy smokes. You guys are write-in
You're not getting through the caucuses. No.
Are you curious to hear our platforms?
Yes. Sure, fire away.
You got your platform?
Let me find it.
You find your platform? I'll tell you what. Here's what I'm running on. All games will be shown locally. We're ending all blackout restrictions, and we're putting the games on basic cable, Zach.
I like it.
We're making them as accessible as possible. All refereeing and regulating that can be electronically conducted will be tested to be implemented in short order. We're talking robot umps, chips in footballs, chips in the puck, the chain gang. Adios, muchacho. Go back to the retirement home, Grandpa. You don't need to be holding the chain anymore.
He's taking jobs away from Americans.
Okay?
I'm on board with that. I've been calling for that for years, putting microchips in the balls. We're using chain links and, not too long ago, a piece of paper to try to measure how the distance between the ball and down the game.
The other one, past the 6-minute mark of the second half in basketball, past the 4th inning in baseball, or the 13-minute mark of the second period, every fan in the building is allowed to move up into the next available seat unless the owner of said ticket comes. Then you have to find the next available. But no more of these, you know, you've got to sit in the third deck while you got a whole empty second bowl. Go down wherever you want.
That's, I like this.
That's one. Removing all taunting and celebration restrictions in the No Fun League. That's another. We're making King of the Court at NBA All-Star Weekend mandatory for the top 10 in points per game. I've
been asking for that for years, too. Do a one-on-one tournament. Do away with the dunk contest.
I would
actually pay to see that. I would pay to see Jason Tatum and
Kevin Durant.
Fill in the blank. In a one-on-one, I would pay for that.
We're releasing all the Last Dance footage, all unedited. I need to see all of the 150 hours. Whoever wins a hockey fight gets to take a penalty shot, so nobody can mail in fights because there's a reward to it. We're returning Reggie Bush's Heisman. We're done testing for steroids in baseball. And accountability for all officials will be made public. So we're going after Tony Brothers and Scott Foster and all this tomfoolery.
They should have to do a presser. They should have to meet the local media after. They should.
Why do you want to stop the testing of steroids, man?
Because baseball was better without it. I don't need to know. I want to see 500-foot bombs.
I actually furthered that in my plan. Steroids are okay everywhere.
Oh, we're just going like,
I'm not going that far. In football, we can't have dudes roiding up. That'd be
why
a little,
not?
Well, they already kind of,
they got things out there.
All right, so what's your platform?
I did further the steroid thing. Days off after the Super Bowl, mandatory. Days off during Thursday and Friday of the opening round of the NCAA tournaments. We all know emergency backup goalies, right? It's a fun story when it happens. We will have emergency backup quarterbacks, so guys like KJ and Kevin Kistner will be available to play quarterback when the Broncos lose both of their quarterbacks. I have made concession stand prices what they are at Augusta. $1.50 for a hot dog, $1 for a soda, and it never changes. I have also decided to build the world's biggest harness horse racing track here in Denver and hiring only Serbian people to work there so that Nikola never wants to leave us.
So prejudiced against the Bosnians. What will the Bosnians think of this plan as we talk about our foreign relations here?
I also wanted to eliminate ties in sports and get rid of AAU basketball.
Ooh. I'll tell you what, you know, my buddy said to me this past month, and he does big time training in upstate New York and does some NBA guys as well. He said, you know how you would fix youth sports? And this is impossible, and nor would we want it, but it would fix it. He goes, if you eliminated full scholarships from college, he goes, that would retroactively fix youth sports. And I'm like, damn, I never thought of that. That so oftentimes the carrot for these parents doing what they do, I mean, is to try to get little Johnny the scholarship. And I never
well,
thought about that.
Well, how's that fixing? Like, explain to me more of how would that fix?
Because the lengths that parents will go have given AAU personalities an extended length to do things that we would never, ever, ever do. Like, we have 9-year-olds flying around the country to different states. You don't need to leave Colorado as a 9-year-old to go to Las Vegas to get good basketball in. I can promise you. But because the hunger and thirst for full scholarships increases with age, it kind of retroactively trickles down to these youth, you know, AAU. AAU basketball's a mess. AAU basketball 20 years ago, you had to be a player. If you were playing AAU basketball, like, man, you must have been good because your town had like an AAU team and you played for it. Now, I bet there's 50 AAU teams in Denver.
And it's not even real basketball. They're not playing basketball. They're playing, you know what they're playing is King of the Court. There's four other dudes that are standing there.
Yeah, right. And you want to know what? As I was pulling in or driving in, you guys were talking about something that made me think of how American basketball is in trouble. You were talking
MPJ.
About the tournament.
Maybe. MPJ?
I forget. But
recruiting?
But,
one and duns?
Was it shooting?
Oh, no. It was one and duns.
Yeah.
It was one and duns. Kentucky's getting the best American basketball players, and they're playing 1 year at Kentucky, and they're not good enough to even come close anymore. And I remember being on the air in Albany like a decade ago saying, 10 years from now, every other player in the NBA is going to be a foreigner. Now, we're not there. I was wrong about that. It's like one out of every three. But I'll tell you what. I heard this on a podcast recently. They said if you told someone, a GM, you could have the number one player coming out of America right now or the number one international player, sight totally unseen. You don't know their name. You don't know who they are. You don't know their dimensions. Almost every NBA team will take the international player. And I will tell you.
Because of the development.
Because of the development. And American basketball, I believe, big picture, is in trouble. And it starts with AAU. It starts with the culture of basketball in this country. And, like, Anthony Edwards is like maybe the face of American basketball right now.
100%.
Who are the best players in the NBA? If the entire league is on the sideline, their names are Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid, Luka Doncic, Giannis Antetokounmpo. Like, these are their names. They're no longer Anthony Edwards.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Yeah, Canadian. Jamal Murray. I mean, it goes on. So, like, look at who's going to finish first for MVP? Who's going to finish runner-up this year? They're not Americans. Who won it last year? Not an American. So, I think big picture, and I'm going on a little rant here, but big picture, and Steve Kerr and the USA Basketball are addressing it, but American basketball is in trouble, and this birthright that we're never going to get lapped is not true.
You're right.
It's not true anymore.
Am I math wrong on this? Would this be the sixth year in a row that a non-American has won the MVP? Two for Giannis, two for Nikola.
Embiid,
and Nikola now again.
Yeah.
We're going to go 6 years without an American MVP.
Well, I love that you bring that up, because Josh and I had this conversation a little earlier this week where I was telling you I'm not an Anthony Edwards guy. Right. Just not a fan. Mm-hmm.
I heard that.
Yeah, and he was saying, well, isn't he like one of the better American players?
Yeah.
And that hit me like a ton of bricks. I was like, I didn't want to say yes, but man.
Yeah.
Like, you look around.
I think he is.
Yeah.
I think he is right now. If you're drafting a team, you're not taking 36-year-old Steph Curry.
Or LeBron.
You're not taking 40-year-old. Right. You're not. And it's wild, man. USA basketball has a problem. They do. And man, you watch some of these college games, the level of ball, you said it to me off the air.
Yes.
We're sitting there watching games last night after we got off the air. And he goes, man, I watched the NBA and the shot making. And then you watch college. And you guys talked about
Matt
it too.
Said the same
it's
thing.
Horrendous.
It's like it's labor. It's labor to get the ball in. It's like hard to watch sometimes.
You're grinding your teeth. You're sitting there hoping that that the shot goes in. They're just throwing up anything now. Mm-hmm. When you go to watching an NBA game, it's like butter.
Watching
just,
Nuggets.
Yeah, well, that's...
Watching the Nuggets, yes.
Oh, my God.
It's such beautiful basketball. And that's part of the reason why the women's sport, women's college basketball, is outdrawing men's college basketball.
I like it, man. I like it. KJ fired up, man. I like it.
And did you see the tick pick report?
Yes.
Six times as many tickets are being sold for the women's Final Four as opposed to the men.
Wow.
Six times. Mm-hmm. So it's just something I'm not like panicking because I love American basketball. You ask me what I'll watch live at the Olympics. Team USA. But to act like they don't have a systematic problem that starts at the lower levels is naive.
I want to pigeonhole one quick thing in here. I just had this conversation with a buddy. Caitlin Clark is not coming back to school, and there was a bit of an outrage. Well, why wouldn't you come back to school? Women's college basketball is more popular than the WNBA. If she can do what she did for women's college basketball for the WNBA, watch out.
Yeah.
Because that could be the piece that turns it for the WNBA. If she's doing the stuff she's doing now, logo threes, you know, 35-point games at WNBA level, that sport could take off too.
Yeah. All right. Really good conversation. You boys have a great weekend. It is Friday and we are off and rolling. I do want to talk about what happened to the Colorado State Rams last night or yesterday evening because it was about as ugly as you can get. Why? That's where we'll start coming up next.